This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get you up to date with headlines. Well, what a busy day for the Mariners. First in the day, they make a trade. They get Alex Colome, who is the closer for Tampa Bay. Get him along with an outfielder, Denard Span. So they get those two players. Gave up Andrew Moore and Tommy Romero, two of their better young pitchers in the organization. But it shows that they're trying to win now. And, of course, Colome now is going to take over the eighth inning role. And that's going to be his job, and one that I think now kind of gives him a 94, 95 mile an hour fastball guy with closing experience. And now that can shut things down and make things even better. Then, of course, last night, things looked pretty good because James Paxton went out, won the game. He's now 4-1, got his earned run average down to 3.10. Mariners get a 2-1 victory over the Minnesota Twins. In other news in the National Football League, Mercedes Lewis ends up getting a deal with the Green Bay Packers. He signs, and that gives him now Mercedes Lewis and Jimmy Graham. So they got two veteran type of tight ends out there, both with great accomplishments. In the NBA, it was a 109-99 victory for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Big game again for LeBron James, who got all banged up. Bad news right now, Chris Paul for Houston is not going to be able to play game six because of a hamstring injury. So he is out. And of course, that's going to be tonight, Golden State going up against the Houston Rockets. And tomorrow is going to be tomorrow or Monday is going to be Cleveland, trying to see if they can get back to the championship. They're now in a 3-3 tie. So lots of good stuff in the NBA, lots of good stuff in baseball, lots of good stuff in football. Those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now is Dave Grosby. And Dave, how are you on this Memorial Day weekend?
John, good morning to you, and doing terrific. Thanks.
Well, that's great. That's good to hear. It's going to be kind of fun to see this weekend, but I guess we have to get over the big trade news because I think it probably broke right during your show. What's your thoughts?
We didn't have a chance to talk about it.
Oh, you didn't get a chance to talk? Okay, so let's talk about it. What's your thoughts on the win now philosophy of just trying to go out and make sure that this works?
Well, surprised they're able to make a deal at this time of the year, and I read the Tampa papers. They were very surprised the deal went down at this particular time, as they started 4-13, but have played a lot better lately. They got their closer from a year ago, and this year, who's not having a particularly great year this year, 4.15 ERA, and Denard Span, who's a veteran outfielder, is hitting, I think, 238 this year, but is a 280 lifetime hitter, has got some speed, and is a veteran, is certainly going to, I think, fit very nicely out there in left field for Ben Gamble. And I agree with you, although it's sometimes dicey to put closers in eighth inning roles. It hasn't always worked. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. But Nicasio is not producing there in particular, so maybe it'll help Colome, who's not having a particularly great year. But he had a great year last year, say 47 games. So it's a tremendous, and they picked up two big salaries, even though Tampa helped pay for them a little bit. So they used some of the money they got from the Robinson Cano situation and definitely made themselves better, no question about it. We'll see how it plays out in the weeks to come.
Of course, I mean, they gave up Andrew Moore, who was their best young prospect pitching. So they're not worried about the future. They're just worried about now.
Well, they also give up their really best prospect pitching, the Class A ball player. It definitely signals. There's no question about what it signals. It signals that they're trying for this year, that they don't view the start as an illusion. Memorial Day is the classic kind of measuring post, the first time you sort of lift your head up and say, all right, you can figure out what kind of a team you got and where you're going. And they're a 10-game over 500 team that has a habit of winning late. They've already developed a personality of winning one-run games. I think they're 14-8. They played more one-run games than, I believe, any team in the American League, perhaps any team in baseball, and they're winning them. And, I mean, last night was another one, 2-1. So they've shown a predilection towards figuring things out, especially scoring late. They're in the wild card hunt right now. It's amazing how the American League has worked out almost exactly as it was on paper. I mean, you figure that Boston and New York were both going to make the postseason, and they have the two best records along with Houston in the league. Houston is, Houston's record is misleading. They've outscored their opposition by 116 runs. Comparatively speaking, the Mariners have outscored their opposition so far by 9 runs. So Houston is playing elite. Cleveland has got the worst bullpen in baseball, but still leading in the Central. And you figured the battle was for the other playoff spot, the other wild card spot. And it's between the Mariners and the Angels and Toronto Blue Jays, perhaps Minnesota Twins, who are in town for this weekend series. And that's exactly how it's played out, except the Mariners find themselves in the commanding position of having that lead in the playoffs. They have that second wild card spot if the season were to end right now. And looks like it's going to be a battle with the Angels for the rest of the year. So it'll be tough to, you know, even though Houston is not that far out in front, and you look at them and you say, hey, you're only a couple games behind them, the way they're playing, their record should be a lot better. So it's still going to be tough to catch them. You're playing for a postseason spot, and frankly, for a team that's had the longest postseason drought in all of professional sports, I'm 100% with it. I mean, I think you absolutely sell out, even if it's just potentially for one wild card playoff game. You need to end the streak of missing the playoffs, and, you know, a 92-93 win season would be nice, but if it doesn't include the playoffs at the end, you'd have to view it, if you're the Mariners, as kind of a failure. So they're selling out for this year, and for the fan base, it's got to be very encouraging, I would think.
Well, I think the interesting part of this trade and what the team has done since Robinson Cano has been out is it's now relied on the pitching. And, of course, nobody expected it to be as good as it is. We know Felix is having his trouble, particularly in the first inning. But you kind of look at what's happened since Cano. I think that they're scoring less per game, because last year they were about a 4.7 run per game. Now they're down to 4.4, and that's pretty much what they've done since Cano's been gone, although part of that was like a 9-run, 10-run game, you know, early in the streak. But, the pitching is only, like, for example, given up like 23 runs, I think, in the last 10 games. And now they've got their runs per game now down to less than 4.3, and that's impressive. And now it's gone from a team that, you know, has had great hitting, and that right now with the injuries, that great hitting isn't there, to a team that's winning basically with starting pitching in the bullpen.
And that's not likely to continue, but it doesn't have to continue. Baseball season is 162 games, and you have different guys leading you at different times. And look, I don't think anyone looks at that Mariner pitching staff and believes that it's going to be lights out for the rest of the year. Just like conversely, I don't think anyone looks at that Mariner lineup and believes, I mean, they only scored 2 runs last night. They've had very few runs scored, as you pointed out, for the most part, since Cano has been gone. Yet they've won most of those games. A successful season is taking advantage of runs, taking advantage of times when the pitching is carrying you. And you hope that that's at the same time when you hit a hitting slump, and that's exactly what's happening. The Mariners' bats carried them in the early part of the season. I mean, look at the overall numbers of that pitching staff. They're not great. They're sustainable. But you don't have any – I mean, even James Paxton, whose ERA is going to go down as the year goes on, his ERA is about 3.10 right now. Felix is nearly 6. You know, Leake and those guys are up in the 4s and the 5s. They're not over-pitching or not out-pitching what they can do. They're pitching exactly to their baseball cards, so to speak. So the key to a successful season – is, you know, having a little bit of luck, having those streaks where you're pitching well happen when you're not hitting particularly well, because you know you're going to hit better, and you know you're going to struggle on the mound, and that doesn't matter as much if you're scoring 8 to 10 runs. So it's sort of a sign of a good start. I mean, this is 32-8. This is as good a start as they've had since 2003, which was the tail end of the glory years and then the start of the great barren period. It's just very interesting to watch that they seem to be getting some good luck. And look, the other thing about it too is, if you look at this start or look at this stretch of the year so far, and they were completely injury free, you'd know that it's not real. You'd know that it's an illusion, because no team goes through a season injury free. And that's not the case at all with the Mariners. They've overcome some injuries. They've also, I mean, it's real simple, John. If I had told you at the start of the year that Robinson Cano would be suspended after having a good 30 game run, that Nelson Cruz would be having his most disappointing season as a Mariner, and I didn't tell you why, he just was not producing, wasn't even their leading home run hitter, wasn't even the top 3 leading home run hitters, that Felix Hernandez had an ERA of close to 6, was healthy, but was pitching close to 6. I mean, and I asked you to guess their record. Would you have guessed 10 games over 500?
No, absolutely not.
No chance. No chance. So they're, you know, a big part of baseball is having good fortune, and so far, they have had that. And again, I always look at things as being sustainable. Is this realistic? Is this something that you can continue on with? And the answer when it comes to the Mariners is yes. And I think the front office identified that and were able to pull off a deal to add 2 players who, again, are not having their best years. But if they play, you know, if the change of scenery helps, if they bounce back to what they normally play to, they're significant additions to this team. So that's another thing that cannot be overrated. You know, going back to my touchstone, which is 95, one of the biggest things that happened in 95 that isn't often talked about was the Mariners making a move for Andy Benes. Not that Andy Benes was any great shakes when he got here. He had a few starts, and he was pretty good, but it was the act of doing it. I remember Jay Buhner telling me that galvanized the clubhouse as much as anything. That was the first time the Mariners had actually, probably in their franchise history, that they had made a trade for an additional player in August at the deadline. And it has a positive effect, a hugely positive effect on your clubhouse. So don't underestimate that, the fact that this is the management telling the team that regardless of Cano's problems, regardless of the other issues, you know, we believe that this can be a special year. And that's something that resonates in a clubhouse. It's something the players are aware of, that the front office believes. And, you know, it's having the exact opposite effect in Tampa, you know, where they have fought their way back to 500 and have played much better than 500 and now have made this move. You saw their starting pitcher, Chris Archer, say, you know, this is management showing us what they think we are. And that's not to be dismissed as an important factor of this trade for the Mariners. It shows the players that management is all in as well, and that usually breeds some confidence.
Oh, yeah. No, I so much agree with. And that's because I'm kind of baffled because, I mean, you're right. Here's Tampa Bay within like three games of 500, and, you know, they're selling. And it's like, whoa, I know they get good young players in return, and I'm sure that that was part of it. But, you know, to give up a closer like that who was an all-star in 2016, was real good last year. What did he have, 46 saves last year? Maybe not has been as good this year, but to give up a guy like that, that's and particularly when the bullpens are so important now.
Well, and it's a pure, simple thing, and they're familiar with it in Tampa, and they've seen it over the years. Now, number one, they've got a pretty good farm system, so they got some young guys that can move in. But number two, and much more importantly, that's cutting payroll. I mean, those were two well-paid players on a team that doesn't draw well, that doesn't make a lot of money. Even though they're kicking in about $4.5 million, they're getting about $14 million, I think, something like that in that range. I don't have the numbers in front of me, off their payroll. So that was the reason why they made that move. But it definitely has that impact. And you know, when you consider, I was looking it up before the show, the worst bullpen in the American League, I think in the major leagues, belongs to the Cleveland Indians.
Right, that's true.
Who are 24-24, have a team ERA of almost six. And the fact that the Mariners were able to snake a guy like Colome out from under the Indians, who have a lot more to offer in terms of a trade, in terms of prospects and things like that, is certainly a feather in Jerry DePoto's cap, no question about it.
Yeah. What's your thoughts on the way the game has continued to adjust and now, you know, the bullpens are now almost more important than the starters?
Well, you know what they're doing in Tampa, John.
I know. I was surprised. I thought maybe they're going to pick up Romo to take Felix's first innings.
Well, that's something that you should think about with Felix, you know, which is another discussion. But I think that the Tampa experiment has got a lot of baseball people thinking very seriously about it. You know, there is something to be said, and it's, you know, it's the last, forget about the old days, forget about what baseball used to be, forget about how pitchers used to be used. You know, this is a significant departure. This is, you know, you get into trouble going through a lineup a third time, so why not set it up where you don't have to do that? Or if you do it, it's in the ninth inning, and you bring in your closer anyway. And they're doing that with Romo again, and I think this weekend, I'm not sure about that, but they are doing it again with him. It worked out for them successfully. Felix Hernandez's problems are not all, we went through with me and Bob yesterday, they're not all in one inning, or the first inning, forgive me, although the last time it certainly was, but they are usually in one inning. But, you know, it makes some sense. It definitely makes some sense. I think that with, you know, and then when the A's were here, John, just to continue with your point a little bit, spidering off a little bit, they brought 10 relievers with them. They have a 10-man bullpen, for crying out loud. So, I mean, they're in position to do the same thing, but I would think that this thing that Tampa's doing where they're having Romo, Enrique Romo, in certain games start the first inning, hopefully getting the first three outs, and he's not their closer, he's just a solid bullpen pitcher, and then bring in the guy that is nominally their starter to go five or six innings, doesn't have to face the top three in the order, and the hope is, you know, maybe even the top four or five in the order, three times, just two times, and then you go to the rest of your bullpen. I think that it's a trend that may very well catch on. When you consider the fact that you've got so many bullpen arms these days, you know, we talk about it. Every team has got, it seems, three or four guys who can throw 98, 99 miles an hour, not just their 95 to 98 miles an hour, not just the closer. The Mariners are in that group, too. They got James Pazos can throw that hard. Nicasio can throw that hard along with Diaz, and now the newly acquired Colome can throw that hard. I think that's a trend you're going to see get some traction. You know, some of them are silly. This is one that I think with the bullpens taking up on an increased importance, as you pointed out, with more money being spent and more roster spots being given up for the bullpen, it just makes sense. If you believe in this third time through the rotation is why pitchers don't pitch very well, why not start a guy in the second inning? So I think this is a huge change for baseball. And I think it's something that actually is going to get some traction. I think we'll see more of it as the year goes on.
Yeah, very curious to see, all the new changes in baseball, because there is a bunch. I mean, it's a very fast-moving type of sport as far as how the adjustments are. And I think you can see that the analytics people are playing a big part of that. And it does make – I mean, could you imagine, let's say, for example, if they would do this to James Paxton. James – and, of course, not that they would need to, because James gets off to such great starts. But let's say they do that and – they have a guy starting the first inning. You know, Paxton comes out, does what he does, has an earned run average of like 2.2, wins his Cy Young Award, and the next thing you know, he doesn't have a start.
Right.
How weird is that going to be?
Reliever.
Yeah.
Technically a middle reliever. I mean, you're right. I mean, for guys like Paxton, for a handful of guys, this is not going to apply. Certainly Justin Verlander is not going to have someone start the first inning for him. But, this is one where, because otherwise I'm not a big fan of what analytics have done to baseball. I don't ignore them. But the fact that you've got people striking out and there's no detriment to the strikeout has made the game a much less interesting game a lot of occasions, with teams just waiting to hit home runs and guys striking out all the time. And that's through analytics. I mean, it doesn't make sense to sacrifice outs according to analytics. And they're accurate. I'm not disputing their accuracy. I'm just saying that it doesn't make for a better game.
Mm-hmm.
This thing doesn't necessarily have that kind of impact, except it has a positive impact on pitching staff. So I think you'll see it. I think you'll see a lot more of it. And this is one of the few changes that I've seen that really does make some sense.
Hey, so what's your plans for this weekend?
Well, we got a couple of game sevens, it looks like. I know that Golden State and Houston are playing today, but I don't see any chance that Houston can win that game in Golden State without Chris Paul. You had LeBron James with an incredible performance yesterday, just unbelievable. And I would hate to be Boston, even though they got Game 7 at home. But to deal with this and have to deal with LeBron James is a tall task. So some of that, and then certainly it's going to be a beautiful weekend, John, and also spend some time, as everyone should, thinking about the soldiers who gave their lives for us to have the life that we have on Memorial Day weekend. That's what the point of it is. So everyone, I hope, will spend at least a little bit of time thinking about those who sacrificed to make our lives possible.
That's a great thought. I thank you for that, and I think everybody thanks you for that, and thank you for everybody who serves us and keeps us in such great stead. And so we both get Monday off. How about that?
How about that? Yeah, Memorial
Day. And this is rare for you because, I mean, you're always one that's not necessarily volunteering.
Love working holidays.
But, you probably have worked more holidays than just about anybody.
Love working holidays, John. It's always a chance to talk to a new audience. But, yeah, let me throw in a quick plug. You hear what we're filling in with? Curtis Rogers is doing your show.
Right. Now, who's doing yours?
Curtis is doing a great job. Curtis is doing a great job doing post-game Mariners this year. And then the first show, the morning show from 7 to 10, will be Lydia Cruz, Stacey Roost, or Stacey Ross, excuse me, and Ashley Cox, which should be wild. That'll be a lot of fun. That's 7 to 10. On Monday. So we got the future on the radio for 710 ESPN Seattle.
And, of course, Mariner baseball will be right at your time slot, roughly. So it should be fun. Hey, have a great weekend, and I'll talk to you Tuesday.
Sounds good, John.
That's Dave Grosby, Bob Gros and Tom, weekdays 12 to 3 on 710 ESPN Seattle. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jeff. Hey, Jeff, how are you?
Hey, good morning, John. I'm out walking for you here.
Oh,
hey, I wanted to make a couple comments on this NFL boycott.
Yeah.
Potential players, all this kind of stuff. Number one, I don't think that no one reads the Constitution. This has nothing to do with the government. The government is the one that you can't be denied First Amendment rights. So if your employer tells you what to do, and that's what you got to follow. I mean, so that's what I find, that the players always sign a bad player agreement. I don't understand why they don't have better representation when they go into these meetings. Like baseball, you know, they had Marvin Miller, who really, you know, revolutionized the players' attitude, I guess.
No, I think that's fair. And that's the thing that you would like to think, is that they could work together, the players and the owners and the league, but they don't. And, you know, they tried it with the coalition last year, the players' coalition. They met with Roger Goodell. Goodell said, hey, we're not going to make any rule changes. And technically, they made a rule change. And, you know, to me, this is one of the silly parts of this, because, you know, it's not like there's this tradition that the players have been out there. I mean, they can be in the locker room as a whole like they were for so many years before 2009 and 10, and do it that way. And all of a sudden, the controversy ends. You don't have players trying to decide, oh, what am I going to do now to show my my opinion on these things? What type of gesture can I make? You know, should the half the team be out there or not? It's like, stop this stuff. Just go back to the simple rule that it was before. You know, you don't have the players involved. And that's not, and, you know, part of it was they were getting some money from the military to have that, and they wanted them out there. But remember, this is the league that put them out there and had a vagueness as far as what happens if things don't work out right. And things did not work out right.
Don't you see a divide already among the players? Because I saw Doug Baldwin's comments followed up by Russell's, and they're, you know, Russell's saying, well, no policy is going to be a cure-all. And Doug Baldwin, who I have no respect for, calls the president an idiot. And, you know, you've got to remember, Doug Baldwin's the guy that did that nice infantile football pooping in the end zone celebration. So, I mean, it's just, I don't see where the like you said, this is only fermenting this, like you said, a silly issue that never should have came to fruition, because only because the NFL, you know, they got some money.
Mm-hmm. That's why I think that the simple thing would be just go back to the old way, because it ends the controversy. You don't talk about disrespect. You don't talk about decisions. You talk about football. I mean, you have the national anthem, which is there for the fans. And that's great, but now you don't have all this drama.
So how many years left on the players?
2020, yeah, basically 2020, 2021.
So do you have any recommendations you would make to the players?
Try to get something done. I think that would be one recommendation. But I think that, you know, you're right. I mean, you know, they are losing on so many fronts that they've got to find a way to get some victories.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I just don't understand it. How the, you know, the biggest cash cow in the NFL and the players, the NFL guys, they've always, you know, I'm 60 years old, and they've always been the guys that have the worst, you know, contractual agreements. I just, you know, is that ever going to change?
It's probably not. I think you owners have such control that they tend to win these battles.
Okay. Well, hey, John, I'll keep walking for you. God bless you.
I appreciate that.
Have a great holiday, you and your wife.
All right, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now, let's go to Irish Mankey. Irish Mankey, how are you in this Memorial Day weekend?
Hello, Mr. Clayton. I am fabulous, and I hope you and Mrs. Clayton are absolutely fabulous, too.
Hope we have a good day. It'll be nice.
Plans for the day, Mr. Clayton?
I got to run some errands.
Going to get out and about?
Yeah, I hope I can get a jog in. I know that I'd really like to. I really need to, but I don't know if I can.
Just do it, as they like to say. Hey, Mr. Clayton.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
What a wonderful article in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette.
You saw that, huh?
Yes, I saw that. Thanks to David Crosby and his texting. He put it out in the universe. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Great article, Mr. Clayton. May 23rd. Everybody, go look it up. It's a fabulous hometown boy does good article, Mr. Clayton.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised they wanted to do that, but it was really nice of them to do.
Oh, Mr. Clayton, you know, You've got people that love you, Mr. Clayton. Maybe more than you. Well, you understood when you went home for that homecoming, I'm sure.
Yeah, because I never expected it, that's for sure. I never thought I would have a day in Braddock, PA named after me.
Yeah, and even better, there's a great picture of you, too.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, great article and a bad picture. Oh, boy.
Yeah, that wouldn't look good, yeah.
Mr. Clayton, so I heard earlier today that C.J. Procise is... finally gotten in NFL shape, it looks like, I guess, huh?
Well, I mean, I think he was in NFL shape last year, but it looks like he's in better shape this year than he was last year.
It's amazing when the job is on the line, you get off your behind, as they say.
Well, I think that he understands this. If he's got more competition, and he watched Alex Collins get cut, and, you know, he may get cut too. So I think he realizes, hey, it's now or never if it's going to be with this team.
But he does do what he does best, Mr. Clayton, and that's catching the ball out of the backfield.
Mm-hmm.
He's really good at that. So, Mr. Clayton, last week we briefly discussed you were curious about where the Irish were going to go this year. And
right. Lo
and behold, this week I ran across an article where they broke down each game, and it looks like the Irish are scheduled to be 11-1. With their only loss, apparently, at home against Stanford. Now, I don't know how good Stanford is.
Right.
I would think the Irish would beat them at home on any given year, but who knows? Apparently, the writer of this article had Stanford being the only team that would beat the Irish this year over the likes of Michigan, Florida State, Virginia Tech. A couple of sleepers like Pittsburgh is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. It sounded good to me. Sounds like I've got a playoff team this year, Mr. Clayton.
We'll see. I mean, I'll be curious to see what Phil Steele says, because Phil Steele's book is about ready to come out, and he's so good at predicting. Now, remember, he predicted good things last year for the Irish, but he may not do that this year.
First of all, you've got no better man with regards to the college ranks as far as having a finger on the pulse, as they say.
Right.
He is fabulous. There's no doubt about it. But he does understand and appreciate the Irish.
Well, we'll see. He didn't appreciate them the year before. He didn't think they were going to be very good the year before that.
No, he's good. And last year, if it was not for that injury to the quarterback, they might have met his expectations.
Well,
yeah, so he's coming soon. Can't wait to see either. Mr. Clayton, you have a great day, and congratulations. Oh, you know what? So what happened to you after St. Mary's?
What's that?
What happened to you after St. Mary's?
Well, after St. Mary's, I went to college at Duquesne and had 25 jobs through college.
Right, but see that... Mr. Clayton, St. Mary's was opening the door for you to...
They did,
the
yeah.
Irish, had you heeded the lesson.
I had no plans to go to Notre Dame.
Oh, I'm not going to go to Notre Dame. You know what we talk about every week. I'm just trying to convert you to the Notre Dame football program.
Okay, well, no, it's like I've watched them lose a lot, so we'll continue to see
Mr.
them do
that.
And I can't wait for them to get into a conference. Thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jed in Seattle. Hey, Jed. Oh, Jed. Oh, sorry about that. Came in my ear as Jed, I thought. Okay. Hey, how are you?
Well, I'm not sure after that one, but I'm well. How are you doing, John?
Doing well.
Any big plans for the holiday weekend, or are you going to have a nice, pleasant one at home with the family?
Pleasant one here, just trying to take it easy. I'd like to get a lot of sleep. I mean, it was a very busy week going to Atlanta this week for the owners meeting, so we really didn't get an opportunity to catch up on some sleep, so that I hope to do.
Boy, that seemed like one big cluster.
Oh, what a disaster. As a lawyer, what was your reaction when you saw what they did? And then not even take a vote on it.
Well, exactly. I mean, if you're going to, you know... Generally, you've struck a pretty good bargain if you've upset everybody.
Right.
Okay, that means that you're pretty much down the middle. But then if you're going to go through all those machinations, right,
mm-hmm.
and then not have the temerity to vote on it, it's like, why'd you piss everybody off without even taking a vote on the thing? You know, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, and then you're trying to show that you have a solid 100% support, and three owners, came out and said, we didn't vote for that. It's like, you know, Jed York from the 49ers said he abstained. Then I guess the Jets, Chris Johnson, came back and said, hey, we'll pay for all the fines if that's going to be the case. And Mark Davis of the Raiders said that he wasn't voting for it.
That was one thing I was going to suggest. I thought Johnson did a great PR move as far as, player management is concerned.
Right.
You know, basically saying, you know, I'm with you guys. Now, you put that stuff like that out there, and he was very, very vociferous about that last year, too. So there may be some legitimacy to it. But if you think about it from a PR move, trying to get players that want to come play for you, talk about a wonderful PR move on his part.
Right.
And it didn't cost him anything. You know, I mean, because he never did vote on it. And so, I mean, I thought that was a very savvy move on his part. Whether it's even legit or not, doesn't really matter.
Right.
No, so I thought that was great. But man,
I just think this was a bad decision because it's like, okay, just go back to the old way.
Yeah. Yeah, just keep him in the locker room and then bring him out at after the song's over.
Right.
I mean, they did that for, you know, ad infinitum up until, 2009? Fine. Do it. Go back to it. You know, just don't even give him the opportunity. I just don't understand. I really don't understand it.
No, I don't either.
But they're consistently tone deaf to any of these PR moves. And, you know, while, you know, Goodell may be, you know, good at making money and turning the NFL into a money machine from a PR perspective, this is just an ongoing saga of just a myriad of bad moves. And, you know, I don't know who's advising him on PR moves and whatnot. But, man, he better overhaul his minions.
Well, I don't know if you watch CNN a lot. Do you see who they just recently hired as an analyst, more of a Democratic type of expert? That's Joe Lockhart. And Joe Lockhart was the main guy coming up in the last year or two because he came in with Todd Lewicki to try to, you know, get some better PR. And he's gone now, and he's on CNN.
Yeah. And that may be part of it, too. But, man, you just got to wonder what kind of advice he's getting because, I mean, it's just a perpetual series of bad moves.
Mm-hmm.
And they're never in front of any issue. They're always behind and having to respond instead of dictating the terms up front, which they have the capability of doing, but they consistently are unable to have the foresight to do it. Whereas, you know, why don't they just look at the NBA? I mean, they've had bigger problems in the NFL, and they're always in front of it. I mean, Stern, as much as I can't stand him, was always very good about that.
Right.
And Silver's been pretty good about it, too. But you got to understand and appreciate your clientele, and you also got to appreciate your rank and file and try to figure out, you know, how much control to exert and where to exert that control. Whereas the NFL is just floundering.
I'm as baffled as you are, yeah, because it's not good.
It's unnecessary.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing that I just found this whole week to be was, I guess the best word to say was unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if they were going to come to a resolution, all right, and it pissed everybody off, so be it. That probably is a good resolution, or a good compromise. But they didn't even come to that. So it's like, I just don't understand.
We're all scratching our heads because, you know, this was so unnecessary. Because, again, wouldn't you like to have this problem behind? If you have a problem that can be costing you attendance, support, and you put players in a bad position, it's to me just it's a head scratcher.
Yeah, exactly. And why let it fester? Why keep it festering, which is all you've done, you know? And I guess that's, you know, to me the worst part is just put it to bed. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, end this.
And I think, as you mentioned, the solution is simple, you know. And this is why I don't understand why they can't come to that. And I don't. And you were there. Is the problem with the owners, or is the problem with New York and the general office?
You know, it has to be with anything, because again, it's hard to get owners on the same page on any subject. That's understandable. I mean, they're used to doing things their way, and everything goes their way to come up with a compromise. But here's one they didn't even put it to vote. They just did it.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm not even sure how well they took the temperature.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, before you make any proposal public, it's like, take the temperature of your clientele.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's what you would do in Congress. That's why you got your whips. Count heads.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and figure out where you're at. And if you don't have it, then don't bring it forward. Shut up. Don't bring it forward.
Well, clearly they only three so far have come out and said that they weren't supporting this necessarily. You know, everybody else. And so there was a solid majority. I mean, because it takes, you know, you have to have 24 votes to pass anything, and they clearly had more than 24. But still, this was a bad decision.
Yeah, I just don't understand. But it's consistent.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and you can understand. It's, what's going to be interesting is how much temerity the players are going to have in the next contract negotiation.
Right.
You know, because I'm tired of the player, and so much of this is just a backlash. A lot of these issues are just backlashes from the players being, you know, upset about the last labor contract. Now, it wasn't a very good labor contract, but, you know, you guys voted for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you don't want to have the backbone and oppose it and go on strike or what have you, that's fine. But you know, you agreed to it, so live with it and deal with it. But the question is going to be, you know, are these guys going to, you know, put up the next go around? And, you know, the problem is I just don't see the NFL doing this the way, for example, baseball has throughout the decades, simply because their careers are just so short. They
Agreed.
Can't afford the time off.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, whereas baseball, I mean, once you guys get to the majors, you know, their careers are far longer. You know, so I can understand the NFL player union not having the backbone and temerity that the baseball players and basketball players, for that extent, have. But, you know, that's the only way to resolve this. Because, I mean, let's face it, you know, the walk-ons were a disaster in the late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And so call the owner's bluff. You know, I
think that's going to be tough to do. I just think that the players, you know, it's hard because, again, they're giving up money. And, of course,
yep.
They may not be getting what they can get. But I just find that hard. It's like I don't see the guts that were there in the 70s and 80s during those strikes. I just don't see it.
Well, I think part of it, too, John, was let's be candid. All right, compare the player situation now
mm-hmm.
to the player situation in the 70s.
Right.
You know, comparatively speaking, they don't have it all that bad. You know, they have free agency. They're making good money.
Right.
You know, although, yes, it's just a terrible meat market, and it's not as good as basketball and baseball, for example, but compare it to the 70s. I mean, those guys were getting screwed every mm-hmm. which way you turn.
Oh, sure.
And that's what's even more tragic when you watch these shows, you know, on TV or the movies or whatever, how they're screwing these old players, you know, for the concussions and everything else. I mean, those guys got screwed up front, and now they're getting screwed, you know, but not being covered, you know, by the NFL.
Uh-huh.
I mean, those guys got, you know, just a myriad of grievances. So I can understand why those guys had, and it was a different era, too. I mean, it was an era of revolt, rebellion, you know, as opposed to now it's just me, 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 me.
Mm-hmm.
And what can you give me today? I don't really care about tomorrow. That's the culture.
Yeah.
And that's what you see in the NFL Players Union.
It is a very strange one, but that's the way it goes. And we'll see how the next battle goes. But right now, it's going to be a battle. I don't think there's any question about it. Hey, Jet, thank you for the call.
Take care, John. Enjoy your holiday and enjoy the family.
Okay. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Commando Dave. Dave, how are you?
I'm doing great. What's up, John Clayton?
How you been?
Been great, man. Look, right off the bat, this Memorial Day weekend, let me give a shout-out to the memory and legacy of the troops who gave their lives for the greatest country on God's green earth, to quote Michael Medved. And, John Clayton, while I'm giving memory and legacy shout-outs, let me give one to the coach who gave the Seattle Seahawks their first stamp of NFL legitimacy, Chuck Noll, rest in peace. In my opinion, the Seahawks were in the NFL or weren't an NFL team until Coach Knox came to town. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. You there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because he meant so much to this area, and he came with such a swagger. You know, came in, and I mean, he was the coach's coach.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, you got that right. And since I'm playing a little catch-up, John Clayton, let me give a shout-out to Rick Riz. You know, I take great glee in stating that I don't give a dag about baseball as often as possible in case the man who canceled the 94 World Series, Bud Light C-League, is listening. but I still love guys who love baseball
mm-hmm.
and love hearing Rick Riz calling that no-hitter. Not to mention, I never even heard of James Paxton until that game. And John Clayton, speaking of hometown heroes, the NBA Finals begin May 31st. 39 years ago, the Seattle Sonics won the NBA championship in Game 5 on June 1st. And so fast forward to June 1st, 2018, the Sonics were MIA, and WeTheFans.com, the official sports fan union, in conjunction with the Sports Bar Network, began the annual Sonic 79 championship celebration, and this June 1st is no exception. And the Sonics Game 5 will be playing all day at Buckley's Queen Anne, the only sports bar in Seattle you can walk into and see a 1979 Sonics game and a 2018 Mariners game at the same time. So Sonics fans can go to SonicsMIA.com for the rest. Moving to the Supreme Court decision on legalized gambling, ironically the same week Robinson Cano got suspended for a banned substance. I was reminded of Jimmy the Greek's influence on information, which ultimately led to the NFL injury report. And with all of the talk, John Clayton, about the leagues profiting from legalized gambling, it would seem that PEDs would also need to be legalized and players would have to reveal what they're taking. Otherwise, Major League Baseball, for example, going back to Robinson Cano, would be withholding valuable information like he flunked a test in the spring.
Right.
And guys like Arnold Rothstein aren't going to go for that. You know what I'm saying?
No, I think that's fair. But, yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see how this is all going to be integrated with the gambling.
Right. It really is. I mean, there's a lot of things definitely going to have to be worked out. And lastly, John Clayton, I agree with you and Jet and a lot of other guys that have weighed in. The easiest fix for the NFL protests would have been going back to the previous policy instead of coming up with a ridiculous new one. But the bottom line with the NFL is the bottom line, and it does not want to give the money back. The reason the NFL wants to legislate patriotism is because it's getting paid to be patriotic. But face it, John Clayton, the only reason the NFL was against domestic violence is because there was money in it with the No Means No and No More campaigns. The only reason the NFL goes pink for breast cancer awareness is because there's money in it. The only reason the NFL sides with injustice, the players are protesting, is because there's more money in it. And the ironic ridiculousness of it all is former Green Beret and former NFL player Nate Boyer suggested to Colin Kaepernick that the respectful way to protest would be taking a knee.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's one that the problem doesn't go away when they can have it go away. Hey, as always, have a great Memorial Day weekend.
You too. Best of you, Mrs. Clayton. Talk to you, John Clayton.
All right, Commando Dave, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get together with Shannon Dreher and on the trade and the impact that was made yesterday, Alex Colome coming over from Tampa Bay. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.